Michael Andretti's World GP, turbocharged racing excitement. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
And also with us, Michael Andretti. What's up, No, of course not. We can't just bring these people onto the show.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, still alive.
Okay. I thought maybe he was just like your pseudonym.
I sounded pretty confident when I said that, right?
Yeah.
I'm like 99% confident. And now I'm 100%. He's alive. What's up?
Hey.
Happy 61st birthday to Michael Andretti.
He's only 61?
He's only 61.
Is today his birthday?
October 5th.
Oh, close.
This is probably going to release on October 5th.
Yeah, Joe, you're like, what, October 42nd?
Yep.
Great.
Nice.
So that's pretty close.
Yeah.
And so really though, even though we couldn't get him on the show, I know all three of us were emailing him, texting him, calling him. We all know him, right? We all know this race car driver and his story.
Yeah, all very familiar. Everyone's very familiar. But for the listeners, maybe we should talk about it.
Right, right.
And
so
for me.
Cuz like here's what happens, all right? Every now and again, we have to remind people that we didn't grow up during this time. And, you know, during our time in the 90s and the 2000s and even today, like when people get a game like licensed in their name, it's usually like a super like star, right? Like a superstar athlete. And so when you hear Michael Andretti's World GP, you have to believe that this guy has like some serious credentials behind him. And he is part of like a racing family. His father was like an IndyCar series driver who won a bunch of championships, and now his son, Mario, is, or was rather, sorry, Mario was the father. I'm doing so good here. Mario was the father, Marco, let me get out my family tree, and Marco is currently racing, or at least was up until very recently.
And this is your family tree, so you're related.
Yeah.
You're the
his
grandson.
Last race, his well, last Sonny race just-
race at all?
No. His last race actually was a couple weeks ago. So that's good. Yeah.
Good for him.
He did the 2024 General Tire
House
150.
Yeah. Grand Prix.
The General Tire 150, which sounds made up. There's only one rule for that. You have to use tires in the race.
General.
And what did he do? What did he place on that? He placed 17th.
Wow.
See, but that's the problem I'm going to have with the Michael Andretti story here, is that I'm sure that the guy had a very long and storied career, but he only had 3 first place finishes by the time the game would come out in 1990. And he wasn't even in F1 yet. The format that this video game is doing is F1 racing. But he was doing, like, IndyCar racing, which this isn't. So he would only race one F1 season, 1993, no first place finishes, only 5 first place finishes ever, a couple of additional podium things. That means he plays, like, second or third every now and again. But, like, I don't know. Going back to my original point of, like, it takes a certain kind of caliber of athlete to get a game named after them. And I'm not saying, like, I just don't know. Like, is that good? Like, is racing so competitive that there's nobody more dominant than a guy who could only finish first 3 times before getting his name on the box of a video game?
Well, you're the one that seems to have, like, you know, some insider information. Like, was he like a big personality? Like, was he like really the cool guy in IndyCar?
He was the up and coming at the time, sure. So maybe it was like, I'm looking at it in hindsight saying like, maybe they thought he was just going to be like, oh, and soon this guy's going to be like the Max Verstappen of the 90s, where like he just finishes first place all the time, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, they bought in early.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like,
but I want to go back to what you said a minute ago about, so this game is F1, right?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah.
He was not in F1. He was at the time, IndyCar. Yeah. So they just, it's like, so they took like basically like an athlete from like kind of a different sport or like a different format of the sport and just like, oh, let's just make it about this other one instead.
I would say between F1, Indy, and NASCAR, those are like three different sports. Like, you can't just like jump. I mean, you can, obviously. This guy did, but he didn't even get any first place finishes when he jumped. They're not interchangeable. You
know?
It'd
be like Josh Allen's Major League Baseball, like coming for the PS5.
I guess, yeah, in a way. Or
like
or
you get the rights
Josh
to an athlete
Allen's,
and you put him in a different sport.
Josh Allen's football, but it's soccer.
I think this would be more like, you know, Caleb Williams NFL football. You know, some guy that played in a completely different league that has different rules, but looks a lot like NFL football.
Okay. Well, if they're any less famous than Josh Allen, I don't know who they are. But but your point, I understand your point.
Is he from like Canadian Football League or what,
no? He's a college. He's going to get drafted first overall.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, that's
college
exciting.
Football is a different sport to some extent. So, yeah.
Yeah, they have better rules.
Mm.
Oh, okay. Another episode underway. Also, what's funny about this whole thing, though, is that this is like, you know, that other week where we had that game that was actually, it was The Last Starfighter, but it really wasn't, right? It was like just a port of a computer game. We have that a little bit here where it's like, it's also additional stolen glory from an F1 or at least whatever the Japanese top formula is. Like, I guess that's F1 in Japan. Satoru Nakajima had that this was his game in Japan. It was called Satoru Nakajima's F1 Hero, and you played as him and you did all the stuff in the game as him. And now it's like, oh well, we can just port that to America and throw an American on the box and name, and also like not have him be officially in F1 but mimic F1. So at least with Satoru, it was that he was a 5-time Japanese top formula champion and the first full-time Japanese F1 driver. So at least like there's like a fabled story behind him. I feel like Michael Andretti's pushing it a little bit, but they needed an American for the box, I suppose.
I think, you know, with I'm sure that there wasn't that many. So they probably just got who they could, you know?
Okay. And we did what we could in terms of research. That's the best we've got. Please send all your angry mail about how we botched the history of Michael Andretti to Sean@Sean.com.
Close.
To get into the gameplay, though, this is a racing game. It's an F1 racing game, but it's unlike almost all the other racing games we've played so far. And what's funny about all the racing games we've played so far is that we're talking about racing games on an 8-bit console. And sometimes that doesn't even mean that the whole game needs to be racing. We just saw with the Moffat conspiracy the other week that like sometimes it was just like, oh, we'll just include a little racing or car action inside our other complete game, and that'll just be like a little side component. But it's always different. It's always like, okay, these are the ones that are going to like do from behind the car and fake the 3D. And then there's like the RC Pro-Ams that are going to do like top down or isometric view. And then you have like the ones that are going to do it when you're in the driver's seat and you see all the odometers and the speedometers and everything. And you're like in charge of everything. But this one is like, we're going all in on simulation. Like we want this to be the Gran Turismo of the NES. And we're going to offer different cars to drive, different with different stats on those cars. You're going to have to learn how to do manual gear shifting. You're going to have to learn how to like understand turns and like you know how fast you should be going on those turns and all of that in a way that we have not yet experienced on the NES. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we've dabbled in like some of this stuff, like but I think Mach Rider, you could shift gears and stuff like that, but like it never felt. This feels like it feels a lot more, yeah, like simulated or more like it is what it would feel like to shift gears, closer to it, as close as the NES can get to that.
And yet, what's funny about that is like you know nowadays, people who get like a full rig for Gran Turismo or Forza or Assetto Corsa, like all those simulation games, you know, they could probably take at least most of what they learn and apply it to the actual road in some way or another. But here, like, you can't do that with this game. Like, this is a simulation-style racing game, but it only applies to the simulation of the NES. Like, I think you could somewhat understand the concept of, like, you know, bringing, you know, like, shifting down on turns to slow and not spin out and stuff. Like, you could take, like, those things and apply them, but it doesn't... It'll never feel like that. And so it's a weird, like, it's too early in the simulation thing for it to be practical, but at the same time, it's very difficult.
Yeah, it is very difficult, but I found it, like, functional in a way that, as hard of a time as I was having, I naturally learned it, you know, which made me think, like, okay, this... Any problem I'm having with turning, which I have a lot in this game, or going too fast or figuring out, is my issue. You know, it's not the game's issue. And I do think that because of, like, how much I started to feel like, okay, I'm actually getting an actual feel for it. Like, I couldn't really describe to you exactly what I do when I come up to a sharp turn versus a, you know, like, and like what I do with my speed and everything. I just kind of like got the hang of it. And I think that does speak a little bit to, like, the way that this is designed.
Yeah, and just to go off the point of how simulation-y a simulation racing game is and can be with the hardware. I mean, like, you know, Gran Turismo 7 is to, like, Forza Horizon. Okay, to make it more easy to follow, Forza Motorsport is to Forza Horizons as this game is to most of the racing / vehicle games that we've played in terms of, like, its actual driving systems. Like, it's... I'd still say that this is... You can still call this a simulation game because it does... It's trying to model, like, traction and model, like, your tire wear and... Like, there's a lot more going on here than... what we've been exposed to so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's something to be said about all early simulation games. There's no problem with it, right? Like, the first Microsoft Flight Simulator, people, you know, both hobby enthusiasts and people who were trying it out, like, experience the same kind of thing that you would be experiencing with Michael Andretti's World GP, where it's like, if you're not accustomed to those things, like Joe was saying, you have to learn them by feel. Like, you will just realize that your old behaviors in RC Pro-Am are not going to transfer to this game because they are, as Sean mentioned, taking things a little more seriously with tire wear and pit stops to change those tires. There's four different cars. There aren't car setups. Like, you can't adjust the transmissions or the engines like you can in later simulation games, but... Even just the choice of car is a big change. There's one automatic car, but I don't think it's, like, very useful compared to the manual ones, especially if you want to get anywhere in the actual Grand Prix mode of the game. And then the actual, like, courses themselves are designed after the real F1 courses that the schedule is modeled after. This is following a full 16 race F1 schedule, at least true to 1990. So there's a lot of simulation thought going into this. I just meant that it's funny that this is cutting edge at the time, no doubt. And now, just like how the first Gran Turismo was cutting edge and is now, you know, outdated, you can see that this won't really apply anything to the actual road, whereas video games are inching closer and closer, especially with Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 being, like, you know, as long as you have all the actual gear and rigs for that stuff, like, you can learn how to fly a plane in your video game.
I mean, I learned, like, most of my driving etiquette from Grand Theft Auto, so I totally understand what you mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you really stop at the lights?
Oh, I mean, only the ones that I wanted to.
There you go. So now, as three people who aren't car enthusiasts or whatever, or racing enthusiasts, we don't watch F1 or as much as we'd like to, perhaps. What did you do to kind of get acquainted with a game like this? You know, there's the choice of the cars. Did you go for the automatic one because you didn't want to deal with the manual? Did you just go right into the Grand Prix mode and see the qualifying times and kind of nope out of it? Did you just brute force your way through the first stage of, like, I'm just going to keep doing laps on this course until I learn every single turn and get a qualifying time? You know, walk me through that.
Well, I started mostly with practice, and I'll say that I did pick the... I drive in real life a Chevy Trax, so I figured I'd be the most comfortable with the Chevy car, which is true. It feels exactly like my Trax. And then, yeah, I did mostly, like, the practice stuff at first just to get the hang of it, and then I started the, like, the Grand Prix, and it, you know, kind of feels exactly the same, so... but yeah, I did start with a lot of practice. I mean, that was probably the majority of what I was doing, was playing a lot of the tracks on practice mode.
So I just jumped into Grand Prix and I did do some practice afterwards. It's funny that you practiced a lot with the Chevy and then went to Grand Prix, because the Chevy, I feel, is probably the easiest to drive car. Like, it can take turns faster and all that stuff, but whatever, I forgot which car it starts you off with in like the first race. It's a bit more of a pain in the ass to drive. And I don't know. I'm not very good at this game. I was having fun with it in the time trial, but I can't say that I got a very good time, no matter how many laps that I did. I was getting faster over time, but I couldn't qualify to save my life. So I went back to practice to see the other tracks.
Yeah, I also never qualified. but a cool thing about, like, about the practice is that, like, they'll give you tips on the course.
Yes.
And that was very nice.
I also struggled qualifying because the qualifying times are trying to be somewhat in line with what you would expect in a Grand Prix, where, like, nobody is, it's not like, oh, this one guy did the course in 1:30, and then the next guy did it in 1:40, and then 1:50, and you just kind of see where you can squeeze in within 10-second increments, which you might see in more arcadey racing games. Instead, here, it's like, no, all the times are very close, and you need to be modeling yourself after those times and just kind of eking in wherever possible. And so when you first do, like, the first lap... my first lap of this course, I believe the qualifying time was something like 1:44 was like the bare minimum to get 40. In. Okay, yeah. 1:40 to get in. And I think my first lap around the track was 1:57. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I gotta shave 17 seconds off of this. Like, I don't know if that's happening. So yes, I did just leave the Grand Prix, go to practice, experiment with the turns. And what happened there with the experimenting thing was I was realizing now my issue is I'm not spinning out, but I'm driving too slow,
right?
Like, to make sure that I don't do that. It was a very delicate balance.
Yeah, and I imagine that if you get good at this game, it is kind of intense, because you are, like, you do have to, like, at every moment be kind of in control of, like, okay, what am I going to shift? How am I going to slow down? How am I going to, like, you know, you have to be exact at every moment. So I actually feel like, maybe all three of us, but, like, speaking just for myself, I'm definitely not good enough at this game to feel the intensity it can probably, like, deliver.
Well, okay, so everyone's first lap is always their slowest, because you're starting off from like a dead stop. Whereas each next lap, like, you at least have that speed crossing the line. So I eventually got down to 1:49, and when I was going, like, lap after lap, Some were faster than the last. Like, I did feel that sort of intensity. And not to say that, like, this game has that crazy of a sense of speed, because, like, the actual visuals of the like the game field are pretty bare bones. But the fact that it's also, like, whenever you're about to spin out or you're losing traction and you're approaching that lap marker, like, that is almost like I felt a sense of speed just from the systems. And I can't say that I ever felt like the satisfaction and relief that finally qualifying would have would have given me. But playing the game, I still felt like really enthralled by it. I just sucked at it.
It's tough because on the one hand, you have to hand it to them for just the authenticity of it all, and especially the actual simulation, right? So it's one thing to like say, oh, you know, you got to do the gear shift and you got to, you know, slow down on the turns and everything. But it is impressive that graphically they pull that off too, you know? You both have a map of the course ahead of you, so you know when the turns are coming. It's kind of like as if you're both the manager on the headset and the driver. But the turns themselves like actually feel like they provide some valid feedback without any sort of vibration, which would have been great, but an NES controller can't do. Without any, you know, it visually communicated it well. It's just hard to learn.
Yeah, and
do you
audibly
agree with that?
Too. That sound that you feel like, oh, I'm drifting. Like, you know, I gotta correct this. You know, that like sounds like Mario skidding to a stop, but like it was effective.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things that this game was like had to acknowledge is like just turning, and it's funny because most of us have, if we're playing a racing game, we're probably playing a game that was released after the analog stick was invented, which allows you to turn to a certain degree and not always just go way to the left and way to the right. And because that's really all that you could do in this game, they had to switch up steering by every time you put an input into the left or right on a D-pad is just like turning you to a certain degree in that direction. And when you are not pressing anything, the wheels stay there. And that's kind of like, it's hard to unlearn in most other racing games where if you remove your input from whatever steering you have, whether it's a wheel in front of you or an analog stick, it will usually bring you back to the wheels are straight. So instead, if you're taking a tight turn, you have to like triple tap on left, or not triple tap, but like sort of ease into a hard left or a hard right. And then when you need to straighten out again, you have to do the reverse to get back to straight wheels. And like that's sort of unlearning how to walk in a way, or learning how to skip. It was a weird way. I think that might have affected how bad we were at this game.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I remember having that exact thought at first. And then right now, when you described it, I was like, oh, I didn't have that experience at all because I had forgotten about it. Like, I had to be like, oh, yeah, I did have that experience. And it took me a little while to get used to it. Once I got used to it, like, okay, I was used to it. But when you do stop and think about it, like, well, this doesn't, I don't know a better solution, but this doesn't really translate to what it's like, you know, to turn the wheel of a car.
Joe, you mentioned the sound of the car while driving kind of gives some good feedback, but did you find it odd that that's all you hear while driving?
I was mention this. I was praising the sound of that, like that drifting that kind of gives you some feedback. The like, I don't know what the regular sound of the car moving just on the NES is just like kind of like one, I don't know what you call the equivalent of like one note. I guess it is just one note, but like there's no chord. You know, it's just that one like bzzz, like buzzing gets very annoying in my opinion, and made even worse by the fact that when you pause the game, everything freezes except for that sound, which just keeps going.
Yeah, that's the worst part.
Like if you want to appreciate like the bliss of silence, play this game for like an hour and then stop. And you're just like honestly, like when I stopped, like I didn't realize how annoying it was until I stopped, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like no buzzing.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with the lack of music, because if this game had music, it would have sucked. because the sound is always whatever the chip. I don't know the hardware, how the hardware works, but I'm almost positive just by playing other NES games that whenever there's a lot of noise, the music gets like chopped up, and the music in this would have been completely destroyed by the engine sounds the entire time.
Maybe there was music, but the engine sounds were always covering it up.
Yeah, I think there just was no music. But they definitely could have made it so that when you pause, it stops doing that.
Yeah,
and it's crazy.
In fact, it almost
didn't.
Feels like you have to do, I have no idea, but it seems like you're doing work to make it stay. Everything else freezes. Like, I feel like knowing nothing about making a video game, I would feel like just having an input that stops everything would be easier than, like, stop everything but the sound.
And so we've talked a lot about the Grand Prix mode already, with the first you see a map of the course, then you're brought into the qualifying sessions and see the already posted qualifying times. It's one of those funny things in all racing games where, like, you're always last to go on these things. Like, you have all the information in front of you. It's not like, oh, qualify and then find out the times. Like, you just conveniently go last. Or in Gran Turismo games where there aren't qualifying sessions, which, please, Polyphony, please put those back in. When there's not qualifying sessions, it's just like you're just conveniently last, and the whole game is just like, they also know you're just going to be the fastest car, so it's just about racing back to the front. And that's like a weird feeling where the qualifying sessions kind of eliminate that. But in the qualifying sessions for Michael Andretti's World GP, there are two unique features, I thought. One is that once you feel like you've got a lap that's fast enough to qualify at all, right? So if it was 140 and you posted a 139 and you're like, oh, I'm just happy to be in the race, you can hit the select button at any time. It doesn't have to be at the end of a lap or anything. You could just hit the select button, and it is not necessary to do all five laps. You just get to end it right there and slot right in. So it's great that it's not this mandatory thing that you have to sit through, watch everybody else race, then you have to do five laps, and then you can finally join the race. It's just post a qualifying time and move on. However, if you don't qualify at all, if you do your five laps and don't qualify, you have to sit out of the race and watch from a different driver's perspective, which, like, granted, you know, we're talking about having a hard time qualifying for the first race, so you would just reset the console at that point. But if you're, like, deep into this and you don't qualify for a race, now you just kind of going to be like, all right, I guess it's time for a snack? Like,
well, you could. I feel like if you really wanted to play it straight and not cheese the systems, like, that would be what you do. But this game does have a password system, so I assume that if you didn't want to waste your time watching the computer race, you could just put in the old password and do it again.
And then inside the race, one thing that's interesting is that there's no direct interaction between all the vehicles. The other vehicles kind of act like ghosts. Now, they do slow you down, so do not collide with them by any means, but there isn't any sort of crash or ability to take out a computer via malicious means. Right. You can't like knowingly look at the map and be like, oh, he's right behind me, I'm gonna like make it so that this way when he gets close, I'll just crash into him and you know, I'm the smarter player or whatever. You can't do that. But during the race, even though spinning out is like the possibility of probably the worst slowdown you can have is spinning out and having to regain speed, there's no incident on the course, whether your tires are completely blown out or and you don't pit or you spin out onto the grass. Like, nothing can cause a DNF. You just have to keep on racing.
I mean, I guess that's nice. I don't think it would cause more frustration if you took a turn poorly enough, and I'm sure we would be the ones to experience this. Like, you just kept, like, crashing and burning. I feel like that'd be even more frustrating.
After all that time qualifying?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So not a complaint from me, just an interesting note of what the game's able to handle. And then as far as the remainder of career or Grand Prix mode goes, for each race, points are awarded to the top four. First place gets 5, second place 3, fourth place gets 1, and fifth place gets none. So at the end of the level, the level being multiple races, it's not just one, but a champion is declared based on whoever got the most points. So this is why, like, you must always qualify. Like, you can't afford to, like, miss a race, not qualify, and then not score any points, because first place is picking up 5 points. And the only way to move forward into level 2, 3, etc., is to be the champion of the current level. So there's just, like, there's a lot of contingencies. And so thank goodness they have that password system. But like, it takes a while to even know where you stand, or if you even have enough points, right? The difference is huge between a first and third place finish. It's going to take a lot to make up those points.
I might have more to say on this topic if I ever qualified for a race, but yes, like, you know, if we're going off of the Mario Kart Grand Prix Cup thing.
Yep. 150cc. Yep. You got it.
Yeah. It's the same. You know, you gotta make sure that not only do you beat that guy, but you have to beat that guy by however many places, you know?
Yeah. But like in Mario Kart, you know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of like a sure thing that you're going to, like, you know, like you're going to play somewhat respectable. Like, not first place. First place isn't guaranteed. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, in the main mode, right?
Yeah.
You're never going to be in a situation where you finish, like, 7th unless you just are playing the level for the first time and you didn't know about all the traps or whatever, right? Like, Mario Kart is somewhat...
baby mode.
Yeah, baby mode. Whereas, like, this game, you'd be lucky to finish first once without, like, spending, you know, dozens of hours learning the ins and outs of the individual racetracks. But, I mean, dozens of hours is a stretch, but you know what I mean? Dozens of hours overall in the game to truly, like, be great. And then to find out that, like, what it takes to really, like, clear through this entire Grand Prix is a large endeavor. It's a large, long endeavor. And I think on some level, again, like, if you're good at this game, like, that there's a rewarding system there of, like, there's a challenge, but there's also, like, a sense of progress and achievement. You know, it feels like
you work
a
for EA.
I'm just saying, it feels like a full game here. You know, you in the Grand Prix mode, like, 16 racetracks where you have to spend the time to learn them all, qualify inside them, race against the other vehicles in real time, and score enough points to move on. Like, there's a lot there for a racing game that so far we haven't seen.
Yeah, this is like, I know what you're saying here, and I think, like, the way I describe it is this is a very feature complete game that's kind of rare in terms of what we're playing in, like, you know, this main podcast. And I really have only seen something like it with Fuzzical Fighters, like a game that there's a lot more than just, like, are you playing mode A or mode B? And when you die in mode A or mode B, you got to start from the beginning. It actually feels like a campaign here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I want more games, movies, whatever, to kind of, like, go in this direction. But I do think that this is not, because it's so, like, granularly, like, specific, and it's got so many, like, details that's, like, for racing, that it's not even necessarily for everyone. It's for people who love this type of game. And I think that usually can make things really good for those people rather than, like, really average for everyone. You know, so that's kind of like the vibe I got from this, because this is, like, not my normal thing. Is I'm not, like, super into racing games really at all, but, like, I can see that, like, this is, like, if I were, this would be something I'd want to sink my teeth into even more.
The good news is there is one mode remaining for the people who suck at this game, and that is the two-player mode, because When in doubt, if you aren't good enough to beat the computers, chances are you can beat your friend.
Or you can beat the controller that is not being touched by anyone.
Yes, that as well.
Yeah.
Right, right. You know, it's funny about that, Joe. You can also just make it two computers racing against each other as well in this mode and turn it into a spectator.
Yeah. Take bets, just get your friends over.
I'm down for that. But instead of making it a gambling thing, no, you could actually just race your friend who's never experienced the game, and you at least are aware of the turns and the gear shifting and all that, and you can smoke them, you know, and that would be enough, right?
That's all I need.
I'd like to take a moment to make a correction of a thing that I said. That wasn't Fuzzical Fighter.
It was
Joy Mech Fight. Mm. You just had to ruin it for me. All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I just wanted you to know that I read your mind and I would have told you
after the show
all that.
Yeah, we all knew right away when you said it, like it was Joy Mech Fight. We're like, don't even bother.
Yeah. Joe, that's funny that you just like, Fuzzical Fighter sucked. But no, Fuzzical Fighter was good.
It was all right, but it wasn't what I meant.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. It wasn't on this scale of feature complete.
Well, it's funny. When you said Fuzzical Fighter, though, my brain was like, yeah, Joy Mech Fight. Like, I knew I knew the game you were talking about, and I thought it was called Fuzzical Fighter also, so.
Perfect.
If you're wondering what Sean and Joe and I are even talking about here, Fuzzical Fighter, Joy Mech Fight, I never heard of these games. Well, this is the perfect time for a little quick ad. And this wasn't staged. This wasn't agreed upon beforehand. Sean just nicely plugged in for the episode that we sometimes do these nostalgia bites. In fact, we sometimes do them once a month exactly and deliver them to you every single month. And these nostalgia bites episodes are the Famicom games, not all of them, not in chronological order. We will never
no
do
rules.
That because there's too many. It's actually no rules at all. We just choose a game, we play it, doesn't matter when it came out or if it's even a video game, actually. Pretty soon we're going to start reviewing books and making casseroles and other things on the podcast. But that's all to say that the only way to get access to that bonus show is to join our Discord and Patreon, which the Patreon is part of the Discord, but the Discord's how you really find out about this stuff, because that's where we're talking. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, go to patreon.com/nostalgia. $5 a month for the Nostalgia Bites thing, but $1 to get access to the Discord where you find out about all this stuff anyway. So you decide how much you want to hang out with us.
Yeah, we've got one game on there that I think we agreed in our mailbag episode that we all would have given a 10 out of 10, making it a 30 out of 30.
We never said that. Yeah, but we did say something.
Roll back the tape.
Yeah. No, we didn't say Sweet Home was a 30 out of 30, but we did say that game would be on the essential games list.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Who's to say?
Who's to say? You'd have to be a member at patreon.com/nostalgia to find out.
Join to find out who was right.
But we won't make anybody subscribe to find out whether Michael Andretti's World GP is on the Essential Games list. Michael Andretti's World GP is bringing simulation to the NES, and as somebody who loves simulation games, you gotta appreciate it for that. This game actually is not going on the essential games list, for me at least, but not because of the difficulty. It's not about the fact that I wasn't able to qualify. I had enough fun just driving around in the practice mode and getting a little bit faster and all that. Whatever, it's fine. We don't have all the time in the world to play all these games. We're doing, what, like 640 something of these? We don't have 640 hours left. No, that's not true. We have more than that.
Whoa.
But my point being, the reason why it's not going on the essential games list for me is that argument I was trying to make, probably ineloquently, about how the simulation as racing games as a genre have really evolved from here. And I mean, you really need to look no further than the Gran Turismo PS1 games, but even like from there, they've evolved. And so Michael Andretti's kind of left in the dust, if you will, sucking up the fumes of the other racing car simulator games that blasted off ahead of it. And this thing just doesn't hit top speed. So it's going to be a no for me. Joe?
Yeah, like I said before, this is like, I've never been a big racing game fan. So it was hard for me to get like really into this one personally. I agree with everything you just said, Mike, about the, future games. Like, if you are a big racing fan, like, this this could be maybe a fun thing to go back to, but like it's not going to be like, wow, this is the definitive racing game. Not that it needs to be, but I'll just say my experience with this, I kind of found myself getting really bored some of the time. Like, granted, like, I was losing, you know, or even when I'm on the practice, like, laps and everything, like, when I'm on, like, a straightaway, I'm kind of, like, my eyes sort of gloss over for a second, and then I'm like, you know, it's just, like, it was just really long of, you know, a long experience. Each round was, like, a long experience of, like, stuff I just wasn't, nothing was, like, happening that was too exciting for me. And, again, that's my taste, but I do think that just overall, this is... We've evolved past this for racing, the racing genre anyway. So even if this is your cup of tea, I'm not sure that I would say is essential even for you.
Sean?
I don't want to go until Joe slips more racing puns in. You didn't hit the minimum.
Maybe you just didn't understand my racing puns. They were so good. They were so, like, hidden.
Okay. No, I'll take your word for it.
yeah.
So, I thought you were about to slip in a racing pun there in that segment.
Maybe I did. Maybe there's racing terms you guys don't even know about.
True.
Like terms, like a political race, and then you go to terms of, yeah, see, I got it.
Got it. Perfect.
All right, well, let's switch gears and go to Sean.
So what they said, I mean, I didn't find it boring like Joe, but...
like I found it or boring like I am?
Both. But I will say that this is a very well designed, very fast soapbox car racer. And you could be like the best designed soapbox racer car and still get smoked by an actual, like, you know, motor vehicle. This is a really bad analogy, but it's great for the time and for what it is. It's not essential. You could call this one a DNQ.
All right. Next week we have Pinball Quest, and then as far as those nostalgia bites go, recently we had Konami YY World, which is like a gigantic Konami crossover game. We had Sean's favorite Joy Mech Fight. We had Joe's favorite Sweet Home. We did a whole episode on the first ever Fire Emblem. You know you want to play these games alongside us and hear what we had to say. And I'll give you a little hint. For $5 a month, you get access to all the old ones. How many is that? That's 28. That's pretty cool. 28 bonus episodes. $5. Never have to hear from me again. After you hear from me. After you hear from me on the episode.
Yeah, actually, once you pay that $5, you can't hear this pitch on the regular episodes going forward.
If enough people pay us $5, we will stop talking. Like, you can buy our silence.
It will stop the podcast.
Look at us putting in the work in the middle of the episode. We're kicking people. They're like 30-second skip, 30-second skip.
I thought you were gonna start plugging ZipRecruiter for a second there.
Squarespace actually promo code.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, promo code NES.
I was gonna make a joke, but it would actually be advertising for free. So
yeah, that would suck.